on In Depth today on Industry Chatter. I'm pleased to welcome Doug Smith, who is the president and CEO of Osius Networks. Thank you for joining us today, Doug. Good to see you.
Well, thank you very much for having me here.
Happy to have you, and thank you for indulging us while we talk about the departure of Vivek Kundra. We'll start, as we always do, with give me the thumbnail on what Osius does for its clients in government.
Well, Osius is a company. We used to be Ericsson Federal, so as of January 1st, we're a newly U.S.-owned company that can invest in this space. We are very focused around building the best and latest in broadband wireless technology for our DoD and for aligned countries and governments.
Mm-hmm. The whole concept of divestitures is something we'll dig into a little bit later on. I'd like to explore that idea because I think we get caught up in the M&A part of M&A and forget about the D part, the divestiture part. Talk about working with the Department of Defense in a time like now when the emphasis not just on IT in general, but in broadband specifically and the capabilities that broadband allows a warfighter to execute and so on. Talk about the progress that is happening, I guess, sophistication-wise. It's not linear anymore like it was for a long time, is it?
No, you're exactly right, and it's very nonlinear today. And today, the systems that are envisioned to be deployed by DoD in 2017 are four orders of magnitude. That's four zeros less than what we can do today in a Verizon wireless network, LTE network, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look internationally at the what I think will be a future, unfortunately, of continued counterterrorism activities and soft power projections with some hard edges, the types of activities we've seen in Pakistan lately, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The need to have that kind of broadband technology that we all take for granted in our Android devices and our iPhone and tablet devices, those are needed by our forces. It saves lives, saves our soldiers' lives, saves civilian lives, and mm-hmm. that's really what we're about.
Talk about the Army's decision recently to use the Android platform as its platform of choice. It didn't specifically endorse the Android platform, but it said this is the direction we're going to go in. What does that mean that they are making a proclamation like that, letting people know exactly where they want to go with mobile devices moving forward?
Well, they are signaling the industry, and there are many of us working on it. There are many things that need to be done. Companies like Osius Networks, we're the only company out there with the transport layer, that is the wireless network in a box,
mm-hmm.
That enables those devices to work in the most hostile, dangerous places in the world. So we do that piece. Others need to do app stores, custom app stores for various agencies and missions.
Mm-hmm.
And so all that work's underway. And what they're doing is signaling that the environment they want to build those applications in is the Android environment.
Mm-hmm. When you look at what the Pentagon is talking about, specifically Secretary Gates, the incoming secretary, presumably Panetta, talking at his confirmation hearing last week, and what Deputy Secretary Lynn and Undersecretary Carter have all talked about when it comes to budget pressures, what does a company who does a lot of business with the Pentagon think about? How do you plan? How do you strategize, without giving away the store, of course, for an environment like we're expecting to see over the next, say, 3 to 5 to 10 years?
Well, first, Em, I would helicopter up at the very macro level when Gates, Secretary Gates, said that we cannot, be both a welfare, the world superpower. We can be that, or we can be a welfare state. We can't be both.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's absolutely correct in that. So the country has policy decisions to make and legislative decisions to make around entitlement programs that have to be made, or we will no longer be in the position we are in. Having said that, regardless what decisions are made around public policy and tax codes, the pressure on budgets is there and it will continue. And that's going to move the Department of Defense towards companies like Osius Networks that offer modified commercial technologies at a much lower price point, mm-hmm. and today instead of many years from now.
What does it mean that the Defense Department has been as willing as it has to consider modified commercial applications so rapidly? Because it seemed, at least to me as an outsider, that transition happened pretty quickly, that it wasn't very long ago, that if it wasn't custom, it wasn't happening.
Well, you're exactly right. Particularly in the communications, national security communication systems, custom built has been the way it's always been done.
Mm-hmm.
We have been one of the key instrumental parties in getting that changed in our trials and test activities with DoD and the intelligence community for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that it's really being driven by the warfighter and the need to save lives. There's a lot of very valuable data that will save lives, prevent attacks from IEDs, show where insurgents are setting up ambushes. There's a lot of data that shows that today that's being dropped on the floor, literally, and it's not making it to the warfighter in time to save their lives and civilians.
Mm-hmm. One of the capabilities that we've talked about on this program in a lot of environments and a lot of contexts is the technology that you and companies like you have out there exists. The warfighters they want it. They're able to use it when they get it. How they get it has been a little challenging. And I'd like to talk about the acquisition cycle a little bit when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Doug Smith. He's the president and CEO of Osius Networks on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability is a series featuring a panel of renowned government and technology industry experts, sponsored by Cisco. During this fifth panel in the series, focused on smart buildings and cloud services, panelist Gerald T. Charles Jr., Director, Office of Strategy, Planning and Operation, Public Sector, commented,
"Our smart buildings are now really reflecting the change in our workplace or our workspaces, and so we've really been looking at that at Cisco as we provide a variety of solutions, not just in talking, not just in exchanging the information, with IT, but how is that information exchanged? Where are people? How mobile are they? How do we really help them collaborate? How do they use video as we bring in all the human senses as we make our decisions?"
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, work.
While the wheel was being invented, prehistoric man probably took a snack break. And today, we still grab a little something-something to tide us over when we're on the job. Something sweet or salty or fatty. Unfortunately, those snacks often end up lowering our energy level. And a poor diet can increase our weight while decreasing our ability to work effectively. At Kaiser Permanente, we just think the work snack needs updating. Say, fruit bowls and veggie plates at meetings, or putting locale choices in the vending machines, even lunchtime trips to local farmers markets. It's total health thinking. That's what Kaiser Permanente does for employers that choose us. Provides tools for companies to keep employees healthy and productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
The Patent and Trademark Office hit a major milestone. The agency reduced its backlog of patent applications to under 700,000. PTO's goal was to hit that mark last September, but needed an extra 8 months. Still, Commerce Secretary Gary Locke says he's proud of PTO's accomplishment since it was a stretch goal. PTO recently completed the evaluation of three prototypes for a new patent system. The agency plans to have a new system in place by 2013.
If you're in federal IT, CDWG has the people and products to seamlessly integrate all your communications into a single, unified, accessible communications network. So if your employees are scattered hither and yon, visit cdwg.com/unified. We'll make it seem like they're all hither, not yon. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to learn how switching solutions from HP can decrease network complexity and increase business agility.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday morning's Federal Drive. Want to join the Air Force? There's an app for that. We'll talk with the Air Force about their new app, how they came up with it, and who can use it. And the Postmaster General joins us to talk about the financial status of the Postal Service and to clear up just how much money they might save if they stopped Saturday mail delivery. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out on federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Doug Smith is president and CEO of Osius Networks. My guest on Industry Chatter today, we talked before the break about the procurement cycle that the Pentagon is dealing with, and it's one of the conversations that we'll have later on this afternoon with Government Accountability Office. But the Pentagon has experienced a little bit maybe more difficulty with something that a lot of agencies struggle with, and that is connecting the three elements, essentially, of a procurement. That's your part of it, the industry part, the end users, and the acquisition team, the acquisition workforce. There's been a tendency in some agencies to for a disconnect between the end user and the person that's providing the system or building the service. Talk about what progress you see, if any, and what you'd like to see as that relationship develops and the end users, at least in theory, become more involved throughout the entire process, not just at requirements and then delivery.
Francis, that's a great question, and it's one we've faced every day, and I have the last few years, and we'll continue. It is a very complex and burdensome process. We have end users that want capabilities that our company offers and other companies offer that they just cannot get through the process.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly from our and certainly from my view, I think it's critically important that agencies, that offices and program offices have their own acquisition officials as government. That is not something that should be outsourced.
Mm-hmm.
They should be developing their own requirements and doing their own acquisition process and, of course, being very transparent about what those requirements are with those industry those in the industry that can address them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the issue of contract vehicles. They really, I think, need to find a way to more efficiently put in place contract vehicles that can really get them what they need, you know, when they need it.
Mm-hmm. A number of people have talked about the necessity for the things that you're talking about. Shay Assad has been on our station talking about that very thing. Jack Gansler's talked about it on this show a number of times. Especially when it comes to requirement simplification, that's something he's really been on for a long time. Are you seeing progress in those areas, or are some of these efforts kind of stagnating? What's the status in your view?
I think we are seeing some progress. I think there's been some progress the last couple of years. We've seen some this year even. So I am optimistic. I think the message, you know, that what I'm saying, others have said, and it's well understood inside the client base. And I think progress is being made.
Mm-hmm. The acquisition workforce is a touchy subject because there are not enough people, and the people that are there are still in kind of the ramp-up phase in many cases as they try to bring in a lot of new people. The number 5 to 7 years is usually cited as the number that somebody has to hit before they're experienced enough to really be able to effectively do a procurement on their own. What are you seeing in the core of new people that's coming in? Are they being given the right kind of training, and are they being equipped properly so that when that time comes, they're really ready to do a procurement for DOD?
I think they are. I think that 5 or 7 year number is a good number. I mean, it takes a long time to come up with a competent acquisition official. It's such a responsible and broad role. And so I think it's going to, you know, only time will tell if we've done it well,
mm-hmm.
you know, the transition.
Yeah. As these people come online and as they learn the ropes and so on, Dan Gordon's been going around with his Mythbusters campaign. It's a hard word to say for some reason, but the Mythbusters campaign, try to educate not just DOD people, but all across government, what's okay and what's not. Are you seeing an increase in collaboration before requirements come out? Some agencies are reporting that it's kind of hard to change that culture, to change that mindset to say, hey, it's okay as long as you're transparent about it, to talk pretty broadly with industry ahead of time and make sure when you put them out there, you understand all the potential capabilities and things that industry can do for the agency.
Yeah, you know, there I don't have as many positive words to say. I think that process still has a long ways to go to become where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the role of the very large integrators in some of these program offices is detrimental to the end result of the client getting what they really need.
Mm-hmm. Is that a case where where you have people who are working in the procurement offices in industry, and then that's been contracted out, as you were talking about before.
Yeah, and they're very involved in the requirement setting, and there's a lot of still, you know, most of the people here in town that the contractor community wants to do it the old-fashioned way, which is, you know, long cycle custom built projects,
mm-hmm.
and they are heavily into those program offices, and really are, you know, they're working in their own best interest. Mm-hmm.
What do you think it'll take to get out of the waterfall mode, to change that mindset? Will it take rooting out the contractors that are in the procurement offices and replacing them with government people?
I really think that. I think it's never going to get fixed until government really does what government should do.
Mm-hmm. Drawing that line and then finding the people. Are there people out there who can take these jobs in the procurement workforce fast enough? And what do the agencies do? We mentioned the 5 to 7 timeline. If I have X number of spaces and it's going to be that long, I have plenty to buy within the next 5 to 7 years until those people are ready to go. What do I do in the meantime?
Well, you know, it's leadership at the end of the day. It's probably much like it is in industry. It's about the leaders there and what kind of direction and air cover mm-hmm. that they're giving their folks. I think it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Is it a matter of just setting boundaries and saying this is how we're going to do business if you want to continue to do business here?
It is. Yeah, it's leadership. You've got to set down the, you know, the boundaries and make sure that people are behaving the right way and making sure that milestones are being achieved. Mm-hmm. You know, that they really do have to be attentive to the end user and the client and the warfighter's needs and put up real milestones and stick to them.
I want to talk some more about that integration of the acquisition office and the end user when we come back. Doug Smith is my guest. He's president and CEO of Osius Networks on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back in a moment.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For soldiers, airmen, and veterans, there's no better place to go for your life insurance needs than AFMA. Our level term to age 50 policy is only $19 per month for $400,000 of coverage, and each member's policy comes with AFMA's Survivor Assistance Services. For a free quote on life insurance, call 1-877-398-2263 or visit AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. All without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
Are you a Federal or U.S. Postal Service employee or an active member of the Uniformed Services? Through June 24th, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program is holding its first open season for new applicants since 2002. Actively at work, Federal and U.S. Postal Service employees and their spouses or same-sex domestic partners and active members of the Uniformed Services and their spouses are eligible to apply with abbreviated underwriting, which means you answer fewer health questions. Learn more at ltcfeds.com.
Profile America, Thursday, June 16th. Many of us as children loved sleeping on our front porch or balcony, pretending to be camping out in some remote wilderness. Sometime in the middle of the night, we came inside and dragged our pillow and sheets to our room in order to really go to sleep. Later, we camped out as part of Boy or Girl Scout programs. The urge to camp out continues, and with the weather now at its best, this is National Camping Month. Camping equipment today is far better in quality and lighter in weight than that of years ago, and allows us to sustain ourselves in a wider variety of natural settings. Nearly 50 million people enjoy camping out each year. They spend about $1.4 billion a year on camping equipment. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Celebrate summer and support the Boys and Girls Clubs at Safeway's Barbecue Battle, June 25th and 26th on Pennsylvania Avenue. This great family event features the nation's best barbecue, along with 30 great rock, R&B, and blues bands, plenty of free food samples, celebrity chefs, contests, prizes, and more. Easy to get to by Metro. Call 202-828-3099 or visit bbqdc.com. See you at the barbecue.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. The innate immune system deals with a set of standard kinds of threats to the body.
It could be bacteria, it could be viruses, it could be different kinds of fungi, and so on.
Dr. Michael Resnick is a principal investigator at the National Institutes of Health.
That when they come into the body, they represent a threat.
The threat is met by a family of genes known as toll-like receptors. Toll-like receptors are proteins that play a role by defending the body from threats. New research is showing DNA damage changes how toll-like receptors work. For details on this research, visit www.niehs.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Doug Smith is the president and CEO of Osius Networks, and he's my guest on Industry Chatter today as we talk about what is going on in government. I want to go back to something that we discussed a little bit earlier, and that is the kind of the intersection between the end users and the acquisition teams at the agencies that you deal with, in particular DOD. As the acquisition workforce grows and as technical solutions to the challenges that the end users have become more and more complex, is the knowledge base and the skill base of the acquisition team growing to be able to evaluate what, for example, your bid looks like compared to what my company's bid looks like? And I guarantee you, mine wouldn't be anywhere near as good as yours, but that's neither here nor there. Are they able to look at two potential solutions to the same need that look totally different and evaluate them effectively, do you think?
I would certainly like to think so. I think it remains to be seen because, you know, technology is complex and things are changing pretty quickly. I think it's tough for them to keep up from a technology perspective, so they have to, of course, lean out to trusted partners, MITRE and others. But you know, by reaching out, if they are reaching out, they should be able to manage that.
There are still a lot of folks that believe that the procurement teams at agencies are in a widget buying mode where it's pretty clear whether something does or doesn't suit the need. And the idea of buying so many services, especially at the Pentagon, is a little more challenging. Are you seeing that?
Services is much harder. Yeah, it certainly is. And of course, the way the rules work, it's a challenge when you're delivering a very complex solution like we do, which is think about a broadband wireless network, but in hostile, difficult places. These are complex solutions. It's not something you can package up and put on a GSA schedule or package up and put a man-hour rate to it. And so it's difficult for them to procure that the way this is structured today.
Talk about the schedule situation a little bit, because you mentioned that earlier too. What's good and what's not about the ability of the agencies to buy services like what you provide?
Well, I think schedules are a great vehicle for buying commodities. But if you're not a commodity, if you're really leading edge and you're pushing the boundaries and you're bringing certain mission needs that are urgent, you can't do it that way. You got to find another way to do it. and then you've got to search for these contract vehicles, and so it ends up being a very inefficient chain of perhaps a number of companies in the middle that don't provide any value, mm-hmm. but that the government has to pay. And surely there's a better way.
Do you have an idea of what a better way would look like to give the agencies the competition that they're looking for and give companies like you're looking for a way to work directly with them?
Yeah, the acquisition authority should be able to – there should be a way. We need a way as a country and a government to be able to put contract vehicles in place much more quickly and with much more flexibility,
mm-hmm.
so that these inefficient supply chains can be done away with and they can get to the products and services they need.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a thought about what's driving that inefficiency, about what's causing these vehicles to take so long to get put into place?
It's the rules as they are today, and frankly, a lot of the largest, most established players like those rules. It benefits them. They end up being the ones in the middle charging extra program management money.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the end users and the innovators that suffer.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because you're not the first person to say that the end users at the agencies understand innovation and understand the possibilities, or understand even that they don't understand all the possibilities, and that their partners like you can come to them and say, well, you could do it this way, which may be a way that they didn't know existed. That's a good sign, isn't it? I mean, for a lot of people who think that government IT is way far behind where the private sector's headed.
Well, I certainly don't see that. In terms of, I moved here 3 years ago from Texas to buy out Ericsson Federal and to create OCS Networks, which is really about innovating in the broadband wireless space. I have been very impressed with the people I've met in the national security establishment about communications.
Mm-hmm.
They get it. They know what's out there. They know what's leading edge. They know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very impressed.
Over that arc of the past couple of years, what have you seen that you like about the way that agencies are looking at mobile technology in particular?
Well, they all get it. And what they get is that they want commercial broadband wireless capabilities. Yeah, we'll package it in something much, much smaller and lightweight, and that can be put in very rough or dangerous places.
Mm-hmm.
All that we've already done. But they get that the stuff you and I take for granted every day will save lives, and they want it, they need it. And that's been universally understood truth across the IC and DOD worlds, and even DHS and others.
Mm-hmm. The idea that, when we touched on this a little bit earlier as well, the idea that DOD and other agencies are open to modified commercial solutions, but solutions that are based primarily in standard off-the-shelf solutions, is relatively new. Is money the only thing that's driven that, do you think?
No, I think it's the capability. I think first and foremost, it really is about saving lives. It's about not wasting all that data that's falling on the floor from sensor platforms in hostile places. First and foremost, it is about those mission needs. What's accelerating it, and it's going even faster than I anticipated, is that the budget requirements for the country and the need to cut spending, mm-hmm. is going to really push it our way.
Mm-hmm.
These other programs, the custom-built programs, are far too expensive.
What were the objections that you had to overcome at first, if any, about that transition from everything custom to at least an openness to the idea that we'll use something that's off the shelf and modify it to suit our needs?
You know, not invented here is, of course, always one of those. And, of course, the big entrenched players with the big jitters programs and the WinT programs and others that want to see it keep on, want to see those revenue streams for far outdated technology continue, have, of course, done everything in their own interest to stop it.
Mm-hmm. What about the agencies, though? Are they talking to you about security? Are they talking to you about we're just not sure if this will work because what that kind of thing?
Absolutely. So, the federal government used to build microprocessors. They used to build servers. They used to build storage systems. They used to build all that stuff. And now it's all commercial off-the-shelf technology.
Mm-hmm.
Big buzzword today, I'm sure you've heard it, is moving government applications to the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Only about 90 million times in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I bet you have, right? It's the current buzzword.
Yeah, that's right.
But all that's commercial technology. That means doing stuff the way everybody else does it already.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really rocket science. So moving tactical communications technology to commercial off-the-shelf, which is what we're talking about, standard interoperable, any Android device, in this case, even or iPhone and iPad devices will work on the network. You wrap some encryption on it to your security question, and you encrypt point-to-point, end-to-end, and don't worry about the commercial technology in the middle. And that's what they want. You know, they want to be able to take the best of all sorts of devices, and some of them are custom-built devices, biometric scanners, for example. They want to be able to connect all these up to these fourth-generation LTE networks and know it's going to work without having to customize anything.
It seems to me if you know ahead of time, because you're building, you're buying on a platform that's already reliable and everybody knows it's going to work, like an Android platform or an Apple platform, then you're kind of already one step ahead of the game. You don't...
Absolutely. You know, the wireless industry, taking 4G LTE, for example, which Verizon has deployed nationwide, Metro PCS is deploying, AT&T and others are deploying, and the entire world, in fact, is deploying it. There are tens and tens of billions of dollars per year spent by the technology companies in that industry to build that technology. We get to leverage it. We get to leverage it for almost nothing for our government, which is a fantastic win-win for the taxpayer.
Let's take a step back when we come back from the break and talk about 4G a little bit, because I think we've all seen the commercials for the companies that are talking about it, and maybe you can help me understand the implications of it, what it is going to do for government in particular. We'll do that when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Doug Smith, the president and CEO of Osius Networks, is my guest, and our conversation continues in a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. Congressman Anthony Weiner went back to where he started his political career to resign his seat. After nearly 3 weeks of disclosures about his X-rated photos and messages to women online, Weiner called it quits at a senior center in Brooklyn.
I had hoped to be able to continue the work the citizens of my district elected me to do, to fight for the middle class and those struggling to make it. Unfortunately, the distraction that I have created has made that impossible.
The governor of New York has the authority to call a special election to fill that seat. Other news, Republican Speaker of the House John Boehner believes President Obama needs congressional approval for the U.S. role in NATO's military action in Libya. Today, Boehner responded to a White House claim that U.S. forces face no hostilities in Libya.
It doesn't pass a straight face test, in my view.
And the Missouri River is attacking a makeshift levee protecting the city of Hamburg, Iowa. The Army Corps of Engineers quickly built the dam after floodwaters breached a primary levee downstream. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around, does it make a noise? Yep.
Be like the 4 million who switched to GEICO last year, and you too could start saving money. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Father's Day is not for celebrating dads. It's for celebrating all our dads are. And since Father's Day is this Sunday, don't forget to celebrate all those things with a Hallmark Father's Day card. Even if you've waited until the last minute, there's still time to share a moment with the big guy on his big day. Hallmark Father's Day cards, available wherever Hallmark is sold.
Do you know us? We employ more than 70,000 people in more than 800 locations throughout the United States. Through our network of suppliers, we indirectly enable tens of thousands of American jobs. Tens of thousands. Jobs that put food on the table. Jobs that put kids through college. Jobs that keep our economy going. And yet, many of you don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. We may be the biggest unknown company in America, but our jobs power the economy, and our technologies, products, and services power the world. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Gene Sexton is the Deputy Chief Human Capital Officer at the Labor Department.
Getting away from those KSA essays, which that was the hard part, has taken the whole hiring process from a writing exercise with reams of paper to one where you have verifiable data, such as resumes and transcripts and other types of documentation that can be verified or not verified. And you get a more quality recruit when you can have that kind of documentation.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Doug Smith, the president and CEO of Osius Networks, is my guest for Industry Chatter today. And I mentioned before the break, I think we've all seen ads or heard ads on the radio for 4G technology, mobile technology. I think most people understand that 4G means fourth generation. But what does that really mean for the ability of me, what am I going to be able to do both commercially and in a government setting on a 4G network that I can't do or can't do as well today?
How most of us are going to experience 4G LTE. LTE means long-term evolution. It is the latest standard. It will be with us a very long time because of the physics of it. Most of us are going to experience that in instantaneous high-definition video streaming. So we'll have tablet computers and other devices, and we'll be able to stream high-definition video, you know, without delays, mm-hmm. without the little blue bar that creeps across the screen. So I think that's probably how most of us will experience it.
The word buffering should be pretty much gone, it sounds like.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah.
That's what it's designed to do. And as the FCC allocates more spectrum bands mm-hmm. and more LTE is deployed, 4G LTE is deployed in those spectrum bands, the amount of data, you know, data rates and capacities you can have are virtually unlimited mm-hmm. relative to the amount of spectrum you deploy.
Where is that spectrum going to come from?
Well, that's a great debate with the FCC here in town. They're constantly looking for more. They are looking at perhaps repurposing some of this, you know, what's called ATC spectrum from some of the satellite companies, which I think is a very good idea. There are also other bands, DoD bands and other bands, analog television bands mm-hmm. that have been repurposed.
Yes.
So there's an ongoing process to look at where spectrum is being underutilized and repurposing it to cellular.
But are we at a saturation point where there's not any spectrum that we can go to that somebody isn't already using? It's a repurposing, like with the analog TV.
It really is
thing,
a repurposing. Even some of the, you know, in the last 10 years, as bands have been repurposed to cellular, there have been analogous efforts, with, you know, before that's done, to buy out existing users.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, some of these have been, you know, education networks or very specialized networks that have really underutilized the spectrum, but you've got to buy them out and make them whole and give them another way to perform their business.
Mm-hmm. Are we where we should be when it comes to examining bandwidth and making these allocation decisions?
I think we are. I think the FCC is doing a fantastic job. And I think, you know, it would be my guess politically with the elections coming up next year that we'll see them take some steps that move to get more spectrum in the hands of the mobile operators.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the technology and video and high speed, high definition data being the driver behind that. We've hit the point already, haven't we, where more bandwidth is devoted to data than to voice?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. And the data use, if you look at the graphs, is exploding in an exponential way. The line is vertical mm-hmm. at this point in time. And that's analogous even in the Defense Department. If you look at traffic demands coming out of theater, it has also had the same exploding vertical curve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being driven by the same thing on both sides, DoD and commercial, which is video.
Mm-hmm.
And we see no end to that. You know, it's funny, 10 years ago in the industry when we first deployed third-generation technology, we put out the first radios out there, and we looked at the rate at which data was growing. We saw, well, it's going to take 20 years to load up that single radio, you know, per base station. And a lot of us in the industry thought, well, what are we going to do now? You know, the wireless industry is going to shrink away, you know. But then the iPhone came out, and it changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, now there's many devices of that type out there, data traffic rates are just exploding. And the same phenomenon is happening it needs to happen in the federal marketplace,
mm-hmm.
whether that's CBP, Coast Guard, DOJ, FBI, or DOD and others.
How disruptive has that been for the potential standardization of the devices compared to where we were however long, 5 years, I guess, it's been that the iPhone's been out? Because even if you consider the Android devices not all being exactly the same, my Droid's not the same as my wife's HTC device, but they pretty much do the same things and can have the same capabilities through the apps. So I think you could call most of the Android devices standard. How disruptive has that been for industries like yours, where you have this huge mass of people doing pretty much all the same thing, at least hardware-wise, all of a sudden like that?
Well, it's very, very interesting. That's a very interesting question, and I'm fascinated by it. I watch it a lot. You know, what you're seeing in the handset market now with Android, it's the Microsoft model. So think about Dell Computer and Microsoft, and where are the earnings? The earnings have been with the software company.
Mm-hmm.
So what Google has wisely done in the mobile handset market is we're going to be the Microsoft of, and other companies, HTC and Sony Ericsson and others, are in the handset business or the hardware business, which tends to be a lot lower margin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the game changer there, and you can see it as the second most valuable company on the planet Earth right now, is Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is which is, again, very different than what the PC industry did and what Google and Android is doing, is they integrate the hardware and software design from the start around the user experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they will continue to be a leader in that, mm-hmm. as well.
The model that didn't seem to work as well for them, at least market share-wise, in the personal computer market, in the desktop market, seems to be serving them far, far better, obviously, in the mobile computing. What's the difference? What did they learn from the desktop experience, do you think, that's caused them to be such a dominant player in the mobile market where they weren't in the desktop market?
And that's a very good question. You know, you saw during the 90s a lot of venture capital go into a lot of companies trying to build devices, next generation devices that really brought, you know, improved the user experience, access to data, and so forth. And most of those companies failed. But what Apple, you know, has done for many years is focus on the user experience, right? That's really what they've been known for in the PC business for a long time, mm-hmm. and yet have struggled for a long time. $8 per share, you know, not so many years ago, 320, I think, today. And but I think what they got culturally inside Apple is that focus on user experience. And ultimately, as their business improved the last few years, they realized in the mobile handset business that if you made some investments further down in the supply chain in the specialized hardware, remember the first touchscreen phone was the iPhone that,
mm-hmm.
that really exploded, not only the App Store but the touchscreen. That I think making those kind of investments, which is all again around the user experience, how do we make this really easy and fun to use? How do we make it magic?
Mm-hmm.
Has made a big difference, and Android's doing. Working on doing the same.
My guest is Doug Smith. He's the president and CEO of Osius Networks. We'll be back to wrap up today's industry chatter in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For soldiers, airmen, and veterans, there's no better place to go for your life insurance needs than AFMA. Our level term to age 50 policy is only $19 per month for $400,000 of coverage. And each member's policy comes with AFMA's invaluable survivor assistance services to ensure your survivors get the benefits they are entitled to. Our focus is on our members and their families. Our membership coordinators are salaried employees, not commissioned agents. And all AFMA policies have no war, no aviation, and no terrorism clauses or surcharges. For over 132 years, AFMA has been there for our soldiers, airmen, and veterans. And assisting your survivors is at the core of our mission. For a free quote on life insurance, call a membership coordinator today at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com.
That's AAFMAA.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by ARINC.
The Department of Defense has told Congress that even though Northrop Grumman's Global Hawk Reconnaissance drone is over budget, it's going to continue working on it. Defense Undersecretary Ashton Carter sent certification to Congress saying the program is essential to U.S. national security and there are no alternatives that would meet the department's requirements for less money. In April, DOD said the cost of the project had risen more than 25%. I'm J.J. Green.
Estimates show that more than 20,000 airline crew members clear security at our nation's airports each day. Since the beginning of this year, a unique group of 17,500 crew members from 61 different air carriers have been using the ARINC Crew Pass service to test a new expedited screening process. This trial program at BWI, Pittsburgh, and Columbia, South Carolina uses three layers of secure data to positively identify each crew member in typically less than 8 seconds. ARINC is focused on keeping you moving safely. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Cybersecurity. Private and government enterprises recognize it as an imperative in today's complex, information-dependent world. So who better than UMBC, a leader in science and technology education and research, to offer a master's and graduate certificate in cybersecurity? Learn more about UMBC's cybersecurity programs and find information about UMBC's upcoming fall semester at umbc.edu/cyber.
Celebrate summer and support the Boys and Girls Clubs at Safeway's Barbecue Battle, June 25th and 26th on Pennsylvania Avenue. This great family event features the nation's best barbecue, along with 30 great rock, R&B, and blues bands, plenty of free food samples, celebrity chefs, contests, prizes, and more. Easy to get to by Metro. Call 202-828-3099 or visit bbqdc.com. See you at the barbecue.
We're back to wrap up on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Doug Smith, President and CEO of Osius Networks, in studio with me for the hour to talk about mobile computing and dealing with the federal government. A lot of this technology that we've talked about throughout the hour today didn't exist even 3 years ago, let alone 10 years ago. Any thoughts about where we might be a year or 2 years or 3 years from now?
I think it's going to be even more seamless. I think it's going to become easier to use. And we'll have a great number of devices out there. There'll be new screen technologies that make thinner, lighter, easier to use devices, even roll up devices that can be rolled up like paper. And so I think we'll see more machine to machine traffic than we will people to people or people to machine traffic. Mm-hmm. And particularly in the DOD, I think everything will be connected, every vehicle. And Osius Networks plans to be and hopes to be at the heart of that.
I'm grateful for your time today. It's a fascinating conversation. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Francis.
Doug Smith is the president and CEO of Osius Networks.